Seen her, seen Asher, how could he stay silent? Pretend he'd not seen anything. She'd lost her mind. The strain of being Javale's heir must have upset her judgment, tipped her right over the edge of reason. And while he owed loyalty to her and paid the debt gladly, there was an even greater claim on his conscience. He had a duty to the Circle, to prophecy. And somebody had to save her, even if it was from herself. They weren't holding hands, not exactly, but their fingertips were touching as they tiptoed to the tack room, and she was looking into his face with her unlocked heart in her eyes. He was grinning, happier than the city had ever seen him. She waited as he slipped into the tack room and emerged a moment later with Signet saddle, saddlecloth, and bridle. The horse had recognized his step and was hanging over its stable door, ears pricked, nostrils fluttering a welcome. He saddled up, and she draped herself over the door, watching, giggling softly. Daphne? It was hard to believe. When he was done, she swung open the door for him and stood aside as he led Signet into the yard. "Ride carefully now," she admonished him, her voice hushed. "The kingdom needs its Olkin administrator in one piece." Her hand was on his arm. There was something terrifyingly possessive about the simple gesture. She smiled, her expression wicked and suggestive and heartbreakingly intimate. "And so do I." His hand slid round her waist, down to her hips, down even lower, and he pulled her to him with a grunt of satisfaction. "Stop fratching at me," he said. "Signet and me've been out early every morning this week, and ain't come to harm. It's the only time I get to myself these days, and I ain't about to give it up." He nipped at the soft skin between her jaw and throat. "Not even for you." Their kiss was molten, passion unleashed. Matt watched it, despairing. There wasn't enough common sense in all the kingdom to douse this. When they parted, Daphne stepped back, unsteady on her feet, and Asher was flushed. "Now get away from me, woman," he said, throwing the reins over Signet's head, "afore I go off like a rocket. I'll see you back at the tower sharp at 9.
"Yes," she said. "There's the rest of Tevet to get through today."
"Sink Tevet and his bloody principles of jurisprudence," said Asher, grinning.
He swung himself into Signet's saddle and sat there, staring down at her.
"I love you."
"And I you," she replied. "Now go if you're going. Matt and the lads will be downstairs any minute."
She watched him ride out of the yard, then turned to leave through the main entrance's archway. Her face was shuttered again, closed down and self-contained. Matt took a deep breath and stepped out of the shadows.
"Daphne!"
Startled into silence, she stared at him. Then,
"Matt, you're about early, and stealthy too. You should mind where you creep, my friend. You might give some poor soul a seizure."
Closing on her, he took her upper arm in his calloused fingers.
"Are you mad, Daphne? Have you abandoned all sense? You're futtering with him?"
She jerked her arm from his grasp, glaring.
"I'm married with him. It's not futtering when you're married, Matt."
"You're married?"
Speech failed him. Aghast, he looked at her, this sudden stranger, and struggled to find the words.
"Daphne!"
The door leading up to the staff dormitory flew open, and the chattering stable lads tumbled into the yard.
"Not out here," she said grimly, and stalked to the office.
He followed her inside and closed the door behind them.
"You're married with him,"
he said, despair reducing his voice to a whisper.
"Does Vera know?"
"Not yet."
"Why, Daphne?"
he asked her.
"Why did you do it?"
"Because I had to. Because I need him bound to me, body and soul. He's holding something back, Matt. Something important. I must know what it is. He collapsed into the officer's dilapidated armchair and rubbed his hands across his face.
You are mad. You told Asher you loved him, Daphne. I heard you.
Her cheeks tinted pink. That conversation was private.
Daphne! Love won't save you when he finds out you've used him.
Outrage and dismay churning through him, he pushed to his feet and began pacing the small office. Outside in the yard, the horses were neighing and banging their stable doors, demanding breakfast. The lads laughed and joked, gravel crunching beneath their boots and buckets rattling as they crisscrossed from feed room to stables and back again.
When did you marry?
She was watching him closely, chin up, arms folded across her chest. Last night.
Who witnessed? Holes?
There was a moment's hesitation before she answered. Nobody.
Nobody?
He said, incredulous.
You mean you just exchanged vows with each other? No Barlsman? Whose crazy idea was that?
The heat in her cheeks deepened. Mine. He wanted to scream, stamp, throw mugs at the wall and watch them shatter.
Of course it was. Daphne, you're a fool. If there wasn't a Barlsman, then you aren't married. And it is fluttering, and if anybody finds out...
They'll only find out if you tell them, she retorted. Save your breath, Matt. It's done, and you can't undo it. And I was right. Whatever he's hiding, he almost told me last night.
Before or after you fluttered him,
he said bitterly. She slapped him, hard enough to burst stars before his eyes.
Don't you dare!
His face throbbed, but he ignored the pain.
You say I'm your compass, but what good's a compass if you don't follow its directions? Ever since he came here, I've said he should be told.
And he will be.
But only when it's too late. After this, after what you've done, when he finds out the truth, he'll spit on you and walk away.
No, he won't.
Yes, he will. He'll walk away and prophecy will fail, and our lives will have been for nothing.
There was fear in her face now, crowding out her defiant anger. You're wrong. He understands duty, Matt, and sacrifice. He wouldn't be the innocent mage if he didn't.
He may be the innocent mage, Daphne, but he's also a man. He's a man before he's anything else, and if you think a man can so easily forgive this kind of betrayal, then it wouldn't matter if you'd futtered 100 Ashers. You'd still be an ignorant girl.
He was ready for her this time, and caught her wrist before her hand reached his face.
Let go of me,
she said, her voice a deadly whisper.
Daphne.
No! Her eyes were glittering. It's over, Matt. You're no use to me anymore. I'm telling Vera you've stepped aside. Can I trust you'll hold your tongue? Say yes. You must know by now there's nothing I won't do in the service of prophecy.
No, he whispered back. Nothing. Not even strumpeting yourself.
The office door swung open, and in walked Asher, talking all the while.
You in here, Matt? There's half a tree come down on the fence round Crooked Paddock and all the three-year-olds are out. Thought I'd best ride back and warn you, seeing...
He stopped, all friendliness freezing.
What's going on?
Daphne? Before she could answer, Matt turned on him.
And you! Are you as mad as she is? You're the Oaken administrator! Don't you know what scandal there'll be if you're found to be futtering out of wedlock with your assistant? Not even the king will save you then!
Incredulous, Asher stared at Daphne.
You told him?
He saw us.
No, he didn't, said Asher, and slammed the office door. He didn't see nowt. He don't know nowt. And if he values his bones unbroken, he'll let go of you right now.
Matt released Daphne's wrist and stared at the livid white marks his fingers left on her flesh.
Tell him you made a mistake, Daphne. Please, tell him everything.
What's everything? Said Asher. His expression was ugly. What's he on about, Dath?
She stepped forward, barring Asher's progress.
Nothing. It's nothing. It doesn't matter. We were just talking.
He didn't believe her. Gently he pushed her aside and came closer. Matt made himself meet his friend's unforgiving eyes.
I asked you once if you had feelings for Daphne, said Asher.
You said no. Seems to me you lied, Matt.
He turned to her.
For Borrow's sake, Daphne!
I'm sorry, Matt, she said, and threaded her arm through Asher's. Her eyes were pitiless. I wish I could care the way you want me to, but it's Asher I love, not you.
Daphne!
Look, Matt, said Asher, voice and face thawing slightly.
I'll make this easy on you. You're dismissed.
He stared, stupid as a scarecrow.
I'm what?
Dismissed, said Asher. Let go. Relieved of your duties. I'm reassigning you to His Majesty's stud farm down the Dingles. I'll get Ganful from over the palace stables to step in for now. He's a good man with horses. He'll see the place don't fall apart till I can decide who will take over here. He shook his head.
You can't.
I can, said Asher. I have. It's done. Still, he couldn't believe it.
But...
It's done!
There was no fellowship in Asher's face now. No amusement or warm understanding. Matt wasn't sure he knew this man at all.
I thought we were friends.
Asher smiled, stepped closer and lowered his voice.
We are, which is why you're walking out of here on your own two legs.
The smile vanished.
You put your hand on her in anger, Matt. Ain't another man in all this kingdom who'd do that and walk away.
He stepped back again. Now why don't you go see to them pesky sightseeing three-year-olds, eh? After that you can report to Darren. He'll help you with the particulars of getting resettled down to the farm. Matt turned again to Daphne.
You're just going to stand there and let him.
I'm sorry, Matthias, she said.
She never called him Matthias.
I do believe it's best this way.
Her denial of him hurt worse than Asher's anger. Almost, he opened his mouth and blurted out the truth in Javale's air, be damned. But he couldn't do it. He'd sworn a sacred oath to obey her, and he'd keep it, no matter what the cost.
What if I fight you?
He said to Asher in a strangled whisper.
I could fight you.
Asher shrugged.
You'd lose. I never came to this dratted city looking for power, Matt, but it seems I ended up with it anyways. Ordinarily, I ain't one for throwing my weight around, but for this, I'll make an exception.
That's right, even if you don't see it now. And you'll do fine down in the Dingles. Maybe you'll not be as high up the ladder there as you are here, but you're young yet. You'll manage.
You're young yet. From a man 6 years his junior, feeling like he'd been turned to solid wood, he nodded again.
Yes, sir.
He allowed himself a pinch of sarcasm.
Thank you, sir.
Asher's eyes narrowed. Off you go, then. Without looking back, without saying another word, he went.
Chapter 17. Darren and Willa were already at work in their office when Asher returned to the tower, his hopes of a morning ride dashed to pieces. Clooney and her housemaid friends bustled about the foyer, putting fresh flowers in the vases, straightening the paintings on the walls. They dimpled and curtsied as he strode in. It wasn't their fault he was in a killing mood, so he smiled and nodded and pretended not to notice the wary surprise in their eyes.
Asher!
Darren called as he pounded up the stairs on his way to change clothes.
A moment, please.
I'm busy, he called back without stopping. I'll be down directly.
A scuttling of footsteps behind him, a plump hand plucking at his sleeve.
Darren says it's urgent, Willa gasped. It's about the weather.
He pulled his arm free.
What about it?
There was definitely something furtive about Willa these days. He smiled too much, and in the wrong way. His familiar belligerence was drowned in sugar syrup, and yet somewhere beneath the sticky sweetness, a sharpened knife blade glinted, waiting. These days Willa put his teeth on edge in a whole new and unpleasant way.
Please come,
the sea slug said, his eyes wide and earnest.
Darren needs you.
And thanks to yet another promise to Gar, what Darren wanted, Darren got, all in the name of nauseating bloody unity. Swallowing a string of curses, Asher followed Willa back down the stairs and into the secretary's office.
What?
Darren looked up from his desk. The sun had barely started its long, slow crawl up the sky, and there he was, crisp and shaven and immaculate in black, distressingly healthy, surrounded by inkpots and parchments and piles of important papers.
As a matter of urgency, I require the new weather schedule, he said.
No good morning, or sorry to interrupt you, or any such common and garden pleasantries. Bloody old crow.
And a firm idea of how often His Majesty intends to prepare one. The palace informs me the late king drafted the weather pattern some 6 weeks in advance. Does His Majesty intend to maintain the same routine? Or does he anticipate an alteration? If so, I must know. I'm getting messages from all over the kingdom wondering when the next schedule will appear. People are agitating, Asher. I would much prefer they didn't.
Ask Gar. It's weather business, that is, said Asher. Ain't none of my never mind.
I'm making it your never mind, said Darren,
and not without a gleam of malicious pleasure either, the miserable geezer.
Sink me bloody sideways, he muttered.
His head was aching already, and dawn was only 5 minutes ago.
All right. When I get a minute, I'll...
Now, said Darren, if you please.
Clearly, there was no escape. And anyways, the old crow was right, drat him. The last thing Gar needed was widespread agitation over a delayed weather schedule. That'd suit Conroyd bloody Geralt right down to the ground, that would. Willa was goggling at him, fat lips pursed in a smile. He scowled.
What are you bloody looking at, eh?
Willa's smile widened.
Why, nothing at all, Asher. I promise.
Well, go look at it someplace else. You're making me seasick.
And on that mildly satisfying note, he headed for the door, only to turn back halfway, remembering.
Matt's transferring down to the Dingle stud farm, Darren. Draft me a letter of recommendation to sign, would you? Lots of compliments. And send a runner to the treasury so's he can take his money with him, and one to the palace for Ganful to take over just now.
Darren exchanged a surprised look with Willa.
Matt is leaving? Why?
Personal reasons. Nobody's business but his own. I'll tell the king. No need for you to bother him about it. He don't need to be fratched with anything else just now. Right? That means you too, Willa. Not a bloody word.
Frowning, Darren said,
Willa knows the meaning of discretion as well as I do, Asher. Matt's departure shall not be mentioned outside this room.
He sighed.
But I think it a great pity. His Majesty is very fond of him.
Asher felt a stab of pain. And so was I fond of him, before he laid hands on Daphne. Then he shrugged and continued to the door.
Folk move on, Darren. You can't hold on to him.
He overtook Clooney on the last flight of stairs up to Gar's suite. She was carrying the king's breakfast tray and dimpled when she saw him.
Morning, Asher.
the wafting aromas of bacon, fried potato, scrambled eggs, and hot bread teased his empty stomach and doused his mouth with saliva. "Morning. Want me to take that up for you?"
"Oh, would you?" said Clooney, pink-cheeked and grateful. "Only we've a maid with the collywobbles, and there's ever so much to do."
She thrust the covered breakfast tray into his hands, dimpled again enchantingly, and flew back down the stairs. Despite all his aggravations, he smiled after her. He liked Clooney. A lot. If it hadn't been for Daphne. His blood stirred, thinking of her.
"We're married. We're married."
Thinking of all they'd done the night before, and soon would do again, he hoped. With that warm pleasure to sustain him, crowding out all dark thoughts of Matt, he headed on up the stairs. Gar was in his library, barricaded behind towers of books. Asher kicked the door shut behind him and wandered over to stand in front of the desk. "Breakfast." Gar grunted and kept on working. Asher sat down, tray in his lap, uncovered a plate and filched a crispy slice of bacon. Kicking his boot heels onto a handy table, he sat back with a sigh, crunching. Then noticed what was different about Gar's crowded, chaotic library. There was a new painting on the far wall. Well, not new, but new to the tower. Sucking bacon grease from his fingers, he studied the enormous portrait. The royal family stood beside a spreading gelba in full bloom. The velvet pink petals looked real enough to touch. Behind them, the pristine white walls of the palace, jeweled windows glinting in the sunshine, and behind the palace, Baal's wall, soaring triumphantly into the cloudless sky. It was a masterful painting, commissioned from one of the kingdom's finest Doranan artists, Lord someone or other. Short, skinny, busy fingers, temper like a sex-starved tomcat. Bracken. He'd caught his subject seemingly between breaths. Bourne was smiling. Dana seemed ready to laugh. Fane looked so beautiful it broke a man's heart. Remembering them, he felt his throat close hard and tight. Painted Gar stood beside his sister, one hand resting on her shoulder. Posed by Bracken, doubtless. You'd never catch them touching on purpose, unless it was to slap or stab. Gar was smiling too, but his eyes were sad, as though he knew something the others didn't, as though he could see the future, and was sorry. "We were a handsome family, weren't we?" said Gar. Asher nodded, melancholy settling like a mist. "Aye." Gar turned away from the painting. "I miss them so much," he said, his voice low, unsteady. "Even Fane."
"I know."
"I just received word from Nix," Gar said, and flicked a discarded note with one fingertip. "Derm is awake again, and much improved. He's asking to see me."
"Damn."
Unsettled, Asher drank some of Gar's teshu juice. "You going?"
"Of course."
"When?"
"Soon."
He chewed his lip. "Derm know about your family yet?"
"No."
Gar examined an ink stain on his finger. "When I tell him and he learns I'm now the king, he'll ask about my magic, the weatherworking. And if he senses something's wrong, if my lies don't fool him, well, it doesn't bear thinking about." Then he frowned. "Is that my breakfast you're eating?"
"Aye."
He held out the tray.
"You want it?"
"Not any more." Elbows resting on the desk, Gar considered him. "You all right? You had me worried last night." He helped himself to a slice of toast. Bit, chewed, swallowed.
"I'm fine."
"Really? You look angry. Are you having second thoughts? I wouldn't blame you if you were. Last night's working was hard." Asher scowled at the breakfast tray. He had bigger problems than the weatherworking just now. If he told Gar about Matt, things would get very messy very fast. Doubtless Gar would order his stablemeister's reinstatement, and Matt needed putting in his place. Deserved some punishment for so distressing Daphne. A month or two in the Dingles would serve him right. He could come back after that, after he'd had time to cool his heels and accept the fact that Daphne would never be his. None of which he could tell Gar. Far better to let Matt slip away quietly and then tell Gar after the event. He shook his head. Darren's been jawing at me is all. Wants a new weather schedule. Today. I don't have time today. Then make time, he said, scowling. You said you'd fix things so the weather working would go a bit easier on me. Here's your chance. Gar waved a hand at the books on his desk, waved again at the books piled on the carpet beside his chair. I know what I said, but Asher, I can do the weather schedule or I can keep on ploughing through Derm's library in search of the solution to our problems. I can't do both, and you're the one complaining I'm not reading fast enough. With a rattle of plates and cutlery, Asher dumped the breakfast tray on the floor. Gar!
I'm serious, said Gar. With Derm awake again, we could have less time than we planned. If his recovery proceeds swiftly, if he's able to return to his own apartments before our month is up.
All the books would have to go back, and Derm, learning of their removal, might suspect something was wrong. Questions could be asked, secrets revealed. Abruptly, his pilfered breakfast curdled in his belly, and hot fear rose in his throat.
Then we'll be in the shit, won't we?
Gar sat back, regarding him steadily with narrowed eyes.
You are having second thoughts.
One of us has to!
Restless in his chair, he stared through the nearest window.
With your dad gone, Derm's the strongest magician in the kingdom now, ain't he?
Yes.
Pity you can't declare him king.
Gar shook his head. It's against the law. No one can be weatherworker and master magician both.
Then give him the crown and find another master magician.
It would have to be Geralt, Gar pointed out, which doesn't help us much.
Anyway, Conroyd would never accept the lesser prize, not in favour of Derm. And Derm's not married. He's childless and has no prospect of an heir. It's grounds for a challenge. Conroyd knows it. And we're back to schism again.
Damn.
It seemed every way they turned, there was Conroyd bloody Geralt standing in the way. He scowled at his boots, thinking.
Look, he said at last. I know you don't want to hear this, Gar, but I don't reckon you got much choice. With Derm awake, it's too dangerous for us to keep on the way we've been. Go to him. Today. Tell him what's happened. That your magic's failed.
I can't tell him about you.
Of course you bloody can't, he said, alarmed. You'll have to lie, won't you? Say your magic failed last night. And if he can't fix you and Geralt has to be named king, at least he'll be there as master magician to keep him in line.
Only if he makes a full recovery, said Gar. And if Conroyd is content for him to stay master magician.
That ain't his decision, is it?
Technically, no, said Gar, pulling a face. But in truth, I'd not put it past Conroyd to push Derm from power. He knows too well Derm's opinion of him, and that Derm's loyalty will always be first and foremost to House Torvig.
Derm knows that, though. He won't let Geralt shuffle him off without a fight. And Geralt won't raise a public ruckus over it. He'd lose support in a heartbeat.
Gar's expression was mulish.
I don't care. This is all speculation, Asher. So long as Derm doesn't know what's happened, I still have a chance to find a cure on my own and remain king. The second we make my infirmity known, it's over. Now, you promised me a month. Do you keep that promise or walk away from it?
Bastard!
He'd never gone back on a promise in his life, and Gar knew it.
All right, he said.
Not caring how surly he sounded.
But here's fair warning.
1 month and not a day or even an hour longer. That's our agreement, and that's what I'll hold you to, even if you drop to your knees and beg.
I won't, said Garon, smiling.
I have my honour, as you have yours. My word is my word and won't be broken.
Do you doubt it?
No, just wanted my position understood, is all. Gar nodded.
It's understood. Now leave me so I can get back to these wretched books. If you want to be useful, go see Derm in my stead. Give him my regards. Find out from Nyx how his recovery proceeds.
Asher stood, drifted towards the door, eager to be gone.
And if Derm asks when he'll see you?
Soon, said Gar. Picking up his pen, he returned his attention to his parchments. Tell him he'll see me soon. And Asher?
Hand on the door latch, he turned.
Aye?
Tell Nyx to break the news about my family.
Right,
he said after a moment, and closed the door gently behind him.
Morg glared at the gormless young Partha attempting to foist upon him yet another dose of herbal muck.
Unless you desire ears like a rabbit, I suggest you go away.
The nitwit blanched.
I'm sorry, sir, it's Partha Nix's orders.
Then fetch me Partha Nyx so I might rescind his ridiculous orders.
Sir,
the nitwit said faintly and scuttled away. Groaning, Morg lay back upon his raft of pillows. Damn this broken body. With Derm at last defeated, safely silenced and caged once more, he'd thought his mastery complete. But no. Chained to the vagaries of a corporeal existence, he found himself still weak, still hostage. Twice this morning he tried to rise, and twice Derm's mangled remains had defeated him. The situation was intolerable. There had to be another way. The chamber door opened, admitting Nyx. He looked displeased.
Derm, I must insist you don't frighten my staff. They are merely acting upon my instructions. Do you wish to make a full recovery, or don't you?
Morg bared his teeth. He had no time for a full recovery. This body was old and weakened, first with excess, now with injury, and he had lingered in this place for far too long. In the doorway behind the Partha, unnoticed, lurked crippled Gar's pet Olkin. He pointed.
What is he doing here?
Nyx turned, saw the upstart, enraged.
I told you to wait outside, Asher. The Master Magician is not ready for vis...
Sorry, but I got orders from the King, the upstart said stubbornly. A message.
Because Derm was not supposed to know of Bourne's death, Morg struggled against his pillows and let his voice tremble.
From Bourne? I don't understand. Why does he not deliver his message in person?
As Nyx glared, murderous, the Olkin stepped forward.
It's all right, Nyx. Gar said to tell him.
Morg let his voice grow faint.
Tell me? Tell me what?
Rage relinquished, the Partha sighed and folded his hands.
I'm sorry, Derm. We kept the news from you for fear it would be too much to bear.
Bourne is dead. The Queen too. And Princess Fane.
Dead?
Morg whispered, and let Derm's grief well into his eyes, dribble down his cheeks.
No, no. May Baal have mercy.
Gar is our king now, Nyx murmured. The wall stands strong in his stewardship.
Yes, but why? Morg raged behind his mask of tears.
How? When his magic should have died long since.
Poor boy, to be orphaned and crowned in such swift, unkind succession,
he said brokenly.
I must see him. I beg you, Nyx, send for him at once. I will not rest until I can...
I'm sorry, sir,
said the upstart Olkin. I'm here to give you His Majesty's regards and say he will come soon.
But not now?
Morg dashed Derm's tears from his cheeks and let himself sag, frail and pathetic, against his pillows.
Why not now? Is something wrong? Is the weather working too hard for him? Does his magic not hold?
The Ulkin stiffened. Watching closely, Morg saw something flicker in his eyes, and knew that whatever words next fell from his lips would be a lie.
Why would you wonder that, sir? His Majesty's magic holds strong and true. He's his father's son, right enough. He'll tell you so himself just as soon as he can,
Nick said sharply. And if that is your message delivered, Asher, you may leave. The Master Magician has enough to contend with for now. Gar's pet bowed.
Sir, bowed again to Derm. Sir, you got any message for the king? Reckon he'd be heartened by a word or two. No disrespect intended, but he's been fretting for you something fierce.
Morg squeezed out another tear.
The dear, dear boy. Tell him this, Asher. I love him and grieve with him, and promise him this, that together we shall see our kingdom reach its glorious destiny, ordained on the day Baal came over the mountains.
The Ulkin exchanged a baffled glance with Nyx, and bowed again.
Aye, sir, I'll tell him.
He departed. Nyx, too, after more fussing. Ablaze with triumph, Morg allowed himself a raucous, silent crowing. The cripple was failing. The time at last had come. All he needed now was a way out of Derm's used-up, useless body, and the victory would be his. Conroy Geralt walked downstairs to the musical strains of Aetean, berating a servant.
I particularly asked for yellow roses, you useless girl. Are you colour-blind, or just stupid like the rest of your Ulkin friends?
The servant was on the brink of tears, brimming eyes, flushed cheeks and a trembling lower lip. Ignoring her, he slid an arm around his ranting wife's shoulders and smoothly swept her with him along the hallway to the foyer and front door.
That's enough, Aetean. They're flowers, not a matter of life and death.
She pouted.
But Conroyd?
He tightened his encircling arm, squeezing her to silence.
Like little starlings in their nest, my dear. Ulkin servants twitter. And with the Ulkin lout so close to the throne and wielding influence, I would prefer he received no fourth-hand reports claiming I permit the mistreatment of his people under my roof. Understood? She wriggled, and he let her go. Watched as she smoothed her hair with immaculately manicured fingers, jeweled rings flashed in the afternoon sunshine filtering through their townhouse's tall windows. Her aging, perfectly made-up face was sulky.
Yes, Conroyd.
He kissed her scented cheek, softened his manner because Aetean always responded most readily to coaxing.
I have business with Holes. Shall I bring you home some yellow roses?
She reached up and flattened the folds of his silk cravat. Echoes of the flirting girl he'd married.
Very well. And don't be late. The Daltreys and the Sorvolds are guesting here this evening, remember?
He did. And with luck he'd have news for them that would add extra spice to the meal.
Of course, my dear,
he said, and kissed her cheek again.
Till this evening.
He closed the front door on her simpering laughter and ensconced himself in his bright blue carriage, the one with his house emblem blazoned proudly on both doors. The horses drawing it were blood bays, caparisoned with equal pride. This was not a day for stealth, at least not overtly. Dorina's mood was elevated, he noted, as the carriage rumbled briskly from his townhouse to the centre of the city. The gloom of the past weeks was gone, doubtless washed away by Gar's proficient weatherworking, that Doranan and Olkin face as he passed were smiling, carefree, relieved. Death's shadow had blotted out the sun, but only for a moment. He let the carriage curtain fall back to cover the window and rested his head on the cushions behind him. Despite Derm's inconvenient recovery and Willa's failure to uncover malfeasance beneath Gar's roof, still he refused to abandon hope. There was one last weapon in his battle for power that he'd yet to lay his hands upon. He found holes in the cleric's Baal's chapel study. It was a small room, unadorned save for the ubiquitous portrait of Baal hanging above a perpetual candle. Warm light flickered across the Saviour's grave young face, her golden hair, the long plait that trailed over her left shoulder. The chamber's atmosphere bordered on the unpleasantly chill. Holes was reading a religious text and making notes.
"Conroyd,"
he said, looking up from behind his plain desk as an acolyte ushered his visitor into the room.
"Gracious, am I expecting you? I don't recall."
"Ephraim," said Geralt, deliberately genial. "No, I came in the hope you'd be free and able to spare me some of your valuable time."
He threw a pointed glance at the acolyte.
"On matters of state."
"Of course, of course."
Holes closed his religious text, disposed of his pen, and dismissed the acolyte with a smile and a nod.
"Have a seat."
For reasons best kept to himself, Holes didn't believe in comfortable chairs. Geralt arranged himself in the uncompromising wooden stool and back arrangement beside the cleric's desk, and folded tranquil hands in his lap.
"I realize any reservations I express regarding our kingdom's current circumstances will be seen by some as nothing more than the mouthings of an ambitious, embittered man. But I hope you'll see them for what they truly are, an honest concern for Lyr's future."
Advancing age had failed to dull Holes's wits. His eyes were sharp and his expression astute as he said,
"You're here about Derm and the king."
Geralt nodded.
"Yes, and while you and I haven't always agreed, still I think you know me as a man who loves this kingdom, Ephraim, and wants only what is in its best interests."
"Yes, Conroyd, I do."
"Please believe me. What I have to say gives me no pleasure. But to stay silent would be a betrayal of everything I hold dear."
He kissed his holy ring.
"Of blessed Baal herself."
Holes sighed.
"Go on."
"I am trying to remember that His Majesty is young and recently bereaved," Geralt said, frowning, "and that Derm has devoted his whole life to Lyr's prosperity. But I am deeply worried, and have no one else to whom I can, in confidence, turn to for advice."
"Unburden yourself, Conroyd,"
Holes said gently.
"Share your misgivings with me, and together we'll find a way to ease your troubled mind."
Geralt resisted the urge to resettle himself on the uncomfortable chair, and instead schooled his expression to one of sober, somber confession.
"Born was a great king. We weren't close for obvious reasons, but I would never deny his power as a weather worker. Question his domestic decisions, yes, and the way he used his influence, his charisma, to further his dynastic ambitions. That, in particular, I deplored. But it was done and ratified, and even I could see that Fane was something out of the ordinary."
"Gar is hardly mundane either,"
Holes pointed out.
"But for all the wrong reasons, Ephraim. He was a cripple for most of his life, magical as a rock. And then, without warning, his power burst upon him, and nobody questioned it. Nobody thought it was odd. They were too busy celebrating the miracle."
Hearing his own bitterness, he took a moment to moderate his tone.
"And now, with Bourne dead, Fane dead, He's our weather worker, charged with the most sacred magic in the kingdom. And nobody thinks to ask if he's suitable or stable. Nobody has thought to wonder if that capricious magic might leave him as suddenly as it arrived. Holz's fingers stroked the rat-tail Baal braid on his shoulder.
Derm said his legitimacy as a magician is beyond reproach.
It was no good. He could tolerate the chair no longer. Pushing to his feet, he paced the small, cool chamber. Derm was the closest thing Born had to a brother. Born loved him uncritically and trusted him without question. Feelings that were returned tenfold. I doubt there is nothing Derm wouldn't do if it meant protecting his dead friend's dynastic claim to the throne.
That is a serious accusation, Conroyd,
said Holz. He looked and sounded troubled.
Don't mistake me, Ephraim, he said, raising one hand. Derm would never break the law or act against the interests of the kingdom, not consciously at least. But I have come to wonder whether his judgment is to be trusted where Born's son is concerned. And now, with these terrible injuries, the ravages of grief, can we be certain there's been no permanent damage? Is it safe or wise to trust him without question? Holz nodded slowly.
I confess, Conroyd. These are matters I have myself been pondering.
Geralt smothered unseemly elation. And there is yet another matter, more disturbing even than Derm's precarious position. Asher. Holz let his gaze settle on Baal's portrait.
You never much cared for him, or his people.
Perhaps not, but that doesn't mean my concerns aren't legitimate. This Olkin has the ear of our king, and the power to persuade him towards actions that might not be in our best interests. He's been made a privy councillor. Are you at ease with this? For I'm not.
No,
said Holz eventually, unhappily.
I too find Garth's deepening reliance on Asher disturbing. Baal gave the Olkin into our keeping. They are a simple people, ill-equipped to deal with matters of magic or high government.
Tasting victory, he crossed to Holz's side and dropped to one imploring knee.
Then, Ephraim, we can stay silent no longer. You are Lur's most senior cleric. Both of us serve as privy councillors. Gar's fitness as ruler is demonstrably questionable. For the good of the kingdom, we must act. We owe Born's memory nothing less.
Holz's elderly face crumpled.
Conroyd, Conroyd, I fear you're talking about a second schism.
No,
he said, and rested an urgent hand on Holz's reluctant arm.
I'm talking about saving our people from a compromised king and his questionable master magician before it's too late. And our moral cowardice destroys us all.
Holz turned his face away, distress in every frail line of his body.
How do you suggest we proceed?
Then you're with me. When I take this matter to the General Council, you'll add your voice to mine?
Don't you mean, will I champion you as Lur's next king?
Holz said bitterly, his face still averted.
Only if that is Baal's will. Perhaps you should ask her, Ephraim.
Holz sighed.
I already have. Change is coming, whether we welcome it or not.
Heart singing, face grave, he again kissed his holy ring.
Then may Baal's will be done, and thank you for your support.
I don't see I have a choice, Conroyd,
Holz whispered.
Even though I fear we'll break two hearts with this.
He stood.
Better two hearts than a whole kingdom, Ephraim. Remember that when your conscience pricks you.
He adjusted his coat and cravat.
I'll go now to the infirmary.
speak with Derm and assess his condition. After that, we'll talk further. Agreed?
Reluctantly, Holes nodded.
Agreed.
Morg floated beneath the surface of awareness like a fly drowning in honey.
Damned Nix and his damned potions, thrusting him yet again into helpless impotence. Rage was somewhere, desperation too.
And Derm, gibbering witlessly now, the force of his personality diminished to a thinness, a shadow, a mere suggestion of his former self. How he longed to let the fat fool die. But the risk was too great. Body and soul were still tied, and if the connection were broken, there was some small chance the carcass would vomit its unwelcome lodger into the ether, and death. It wasn't a chance he was prepared to take. He heard, felt, the door to his chamber, his prison, open. Footsteps. Voices. The door closed again. He tried to open Derm's eyes, struggled to impose his weakened will on the drugged flesh that enveloped him tighter than a virgin's body. The drugged flesh defeated him again.
There, my lord, you see?
The Pother, sounding irate, affronted.
As I told you, the Master Magician is still sleeping. He cannot speak with you.
A wicked man, Nix, overflowing with pestilent herb lore, interfering, meddlesome. There'd come a day soon when Pother Nix would choke himself to a bloody froth on a banquet of herbs.
My apologies, Nix, if I appeared to question your competence or honesty.
And that was Conroy Geralt. Blood called to the memory of blood. Echoes of ancestry. Hope stirring. The blossoming of a germinated idea.
If it is so important that you confer with him, my lord, perhaps when he wakes I can ask him if...
Good Pother, said little Lord Geralt. May I speak my mind to you? Trusting, of course, in your absolute discretion.
You may, my lord.
Your word as a Pother on it?
Certainly.
A sighing silence. Then, it's no secret, Nix, to those of us whose business it is to know such things, that Derm's injuries were savage.
They were.
So savage, his survival is a miracle?
Yes.
So savage that to think he might regain his former strength and power undiminished is, regrettably, little more than a daydream? A long hesitation.
My lord,
say no more, said Geralt, all sweet sympathy. Your face answers all.
Lord Geralt, it is a delicate matter, I understand.
Such kindness in that warm molasses voice. And painful. You answer to a king who perhaps has lost perspective. Struggling to surface, Morg thrashed feebly against the weight of Nix's damnable drugs. There was ambition here. He could smell it like a demon scenting birth blood. Ambition and a ruthless will to win at all costs. Splendid. This Geralt was strong, and now more than ever he required strength. Had been kept prisoner by weakness for long enough. Geralt was the answer to a prayer. The Pother cleared his poxy throat.
My lord, you know I am constrained.
Of course, soothed his ambitious descendant. I understand you perfectly. Be not alarmed, Nix. We are cut from the same cloth, you and I. Men of honour sworn to serve this kingdom above all else, even the bonds of personal attachment. Derm is my friend. We've served together on the Privy Council for many years, and his fall from greatness breaks my heart. Yet, despite that, I'll do what's necessary to safeguard Lur from harm.
as will you, I'm sure. Now I wonder if I might have a little time alone with my friend. Affairs of state have kept me from his side, and I would lend him whatever strength he can use.
Certainly, my lord, said the mewling Potha. But I warn you, he's heavily sedated. If he should wake, be good enough to send for me at once.
Morg heard the chamber door open, close, heard footsteps come closer to the bed, heard Conroy Geralt laugh softly, seductively. A man on the brink of conquest.
Well, Derm, now it is just we two alone, he whispered, and I shall tell you how the story ends.
Chapter 18. It wasn't the voice of a friend. It echoed with avarice, with deep dislike and ambition long denied. Suddenly Morg realized he was in danger. He thought his mind would twist apart then, so frantically did he try to break the stuporous bonds holding him prisoner. With outraged astonishment, he recognized the acid emotion. Fear.
Fear?
When was the last time he'd felt such a thing? Had he ever felt it? He couldn't remember. No, no, it wasn't possible. Morg, the supreme power of the world. Afraid? Never. Or never before now. But now he was helpless, trapped at the mercy of this man who stank of a desire for death. Derm's death. His death, for so long as he remained in Derm's body. He'd thought to house himself in Geralt next, in a day or two, once Derm was finally free of drugs and he could act unhindered. But here was the vessel now, fattened with plottings of its own, and suddenly there was no time. There came the sound of timber scraping tile as a chair was pulled closer to the bed, a sighing creak of springs, a swish of silk against silk, cool fingers touching fevered flesh.
I never liked you, Derm, said Geralt. The molasses was melting, revealing the naked blade within. And you never liked me. Yet we continued to play our silly game of pretend, didn't we? In order to keep Bourne happy, to keep the people happy, and ensure unadulterated peace. You always thought I loved myself more than this kingdom, but you were wrong. If that had been true, I would have challenged Bourne's right to rule long ago.
With a greater force of will than he'd ever before exerted, Morg calmed his raging spirit, experienced another unfamiliar emotion. Shame, that he could so completely forget himself, if only for a moment. It was a containment, this flesh. It polluted the purity of the unfettered mind, shackled it to urges and impulses and infirmity. He couldn't wait to leave it behind. Geralt was softly laughing.
Notice I'm referring to you in the past tense, old man. Broken man. Defeated man. Your tenure as Master Magician is over. Soon I will take your place, but not for long. Before the year is out, I'll have the means to bring down brave House Torvig, brick by rotten brick. Then Conroyd will be king, as I should have been king 25 years ago. What do you think of that, Derm?
In the depths of his cage, Derm was also struggling. Morg felt some fleeting sympathy. Focusing his will, drawing his weakened powers close about him like a cloak, he saw himself as a lance of fire poised to pierce the veil of Nyx's cloying, thwarting drugs. The flame consumed itself, consumed the remaining strength he'd not used up in his fight to live despite Derm's mangled body.
Were I so inclined, I could smother you here and now, crooned Geralt. Shall I do it? Do I dare?
The way your body's ruined, it might even be a mercy. You were never one for weakness. You'd have smothered Gar if you could. Would Born have loved you, I wonder? Had he known? Had he seen in the depths of your eyes what I saw the day his son's crippledom was made public? Morg felt his spirit shudder, heard Derm's sickbed creak as Geralt leaned upon it. A warm, sweet breath fanned Derm's flaccid face. Soft, strong hands clasped close the hollowed cheeks. As he struggled to escape Derm's useless body, he heard a gloating whisper. There's a shadow falling over you, Derm. Do you feel it? It's the shadow of House Geralt, plunging you deep into an endless dark.
The hands resting against Derm's face tightened, thumbs hot as coals pressed hard against his eyeballs, burning through tissue paper lids. Morg felt his spirit spasm, felt a great leap of power to power, like to like, a song of lust and greed and unslaked thirsts. From far away he heard Derm's dreadful wail of anguish.
"Look at me, you drug-soaked carcass!" hissed Geralt. "Look at me and see how I have won!"
Blinding brightness as Geralt's thumbs forced open Derm's pain-sunken eyes. Morg gloried in it, revelled in it, felt the final surging flare of his strength and will break through the barrier between himself and the wider world. The clammy bonds of failing flesh snapped at last, and he was free of Derm's broken body, free of that terrible prison, free to pour himself into a new host, a perfect host, a vital, vigorous, voracious host. Geralt opened his mouth to scream, and Morg poured into him, flowed through arteries and veins, soaked skin and sinew, suffused Geralt's muscle and bone and brain until no single cell remained that was not himself, left Derm behind and dying, his tongue tied tight against utterances of Morg. Pulling away from abandoned Derm like a man who has unwittingly handled offal, Morg strutted the confines of the infirmary chamber and revelled in the glory of his new host, a man in his prime, fit and lithe and fabulously handsome. At last, flesh worthy of his spirit. Captive deep inside himself, Geralt shrieked and scrabbled and clawed. In the bed, propped up by pillows, Derm breathed slowly, heavily, dragging air into his lungs with reluctance. Morg smiled.
"Fat fool, a pity you'll not be here to see my final triumph."
The sound of his words wrapped in Geralt's exquisite voice was a shock. He'd grown used to Derm's unromantic gravelling. Reaching, he touched a slender finger to the ruined man's flabby, sallow cheek, prepared to extinguish his sputtering life. The chamber door swung open, and Nix cleared his throat.
"My lord, forgive me, but Derm is in need of further physicking. You may return tomorrow, if that's your desire."
Morg straightened.
"I would like that, Nix. Affairs of state permitting."
"Of course, sir,"